And what you see here, again, the gray line, international issuance that has been stable over the years, and a local currency market that has actually developed very rapidly in contrast. Financial institutions and the sovereign dominate issuance, and you can observe on that chart that the corporate sector is still very small, representing less than 10% of issuance today. And this may be explained by many factors, including the periods of macroeconomic instability, high rate interest rates, and also a weakness of secondary market for corporate debt. There has been some regulation introduced for the use of national scale ratings for institutional investors in Brazil in 2001, requiring one rating to be used. And that has been one, but not the most important factor of growth for credit ratings in that country. Turning to South Africa, where we have had a presence now for many years, Moody's first rated the government in 1994. The international issuance has been steadily increasing over the year. Again, it's dwarfed by, obviously, domestic activity, which, as you can see from the chart, has been much bumpier than in other countries I've talked about before. Today, local debt market represents about 50% of GDP. And similar to Brazil, the government and SOEs have been really the dominant issuers in this market. But now we see here that financial institutions and corporates, which here include SOEs, would represent about half of government debt issuance. Now in South Africa, we have no regulatory requirement effectively around the use of rating. Except they're used in banking and collective investment scheme legislation. Now, however, we've seen a market practice that has developed over time, which effectively requires today, although it's not a requirement, in practice, we see one rating being assigned typically, and that for each issuance, and this without regulatory mandate. Let's go to Russia now. In Russia, we have a different situation here where a domestic market, when you look at the relative size of the domestic and the international market, unlike the previous example, the international market, the gray line here, has been effectively running almost at par with the local currency market. And again, here, government representing a very large portion of that issuance, about 50% of the domestic market. Corporates and banks, to issue predominantly foreign currency across border and are rated effectively to access international market. And the ratings are broadly used, almost without exception for in that context. In a domestic market, only a third of the existing issuers are rated, although we see that situation evolving and an increasing contribution from domestic source of funding is actually supported by an increasing use of ratings. Again, in Russia, there's been no mandatory use of ratings through regulation. And actually, the use of rating has really been driven first by the use of cross-border debt as a primary source of funding, and now by the dynamics of the cross-border market. My last example or illustration will be China here, where, again, here we see, you can almost not distinguish here the gray line from the axis effectively because of the small size obviously of international issuance. The government is a dominant player in the domestic market, but also financial institutions and corporate are now playing an increasing role. And this is obviously driven by the macroeconomic trend and the strength of the economy and high saving rates. The use of credit ratings is extensive and is really driven by a very significant regulatory use, and that is impacting effectively both the issuers and the investors. So those are the sort of example I wanted to provide here as to how ratings are being used in different markets. I would note that in each of the cases I've discussed, ratings have played a role in the growth of the disintermediation of credit, either through a supportive or enabling regulatory environment, or through the demands by direct and indirect for market participants. And in both cases, actually, the value that is being sold in ratings is similar. It is basically to provide information and credit analytics and convert them really in a convenient and well-understood point of reference, a sort of common language of credit, basically. And really, in doing that, we're addressing some of the issues that Alison was bringing up earlier. We provide independent third-party analysis to credit risk. We reduce information asymmetries that are very significant in emerging markets. And we also contribute to a deeper understanding of credit risk and a more efficient flow of capital. Now, as I said before, regulation has played a role. It's clear, and we cannot ignore that, in establishing credit rating as a tool to support the development of this market. However, again, as I said before, while helpful and practical and very convenient at certain stages of development, we have to be careful on how much hard coding and how much ingrained, entrenched ratings are in the regulatory infrastructure. We believe that rating agencies' role in assigning and supporting the market developments should really be based on their capacity and ability as market competitors and opinion providers to provide insightful analysis and redifferentiate credit risk. This is what should really be the underpinning of our presence in these markets. We've long supported an initiative to reduce regulatory reliance and continue to do so. And I think everybody has realized for the last few years that the mechanistic reliance on any single measure of credit risk, including ratings, is something that is not healthy and has the potential to create system-wide disruptions. So in conclusion, and to go back to some of the comments that were made before, I think for a market to develop, investors must have confidence in the stability, the integrity, and transparency of the market. They know that their investment decision, by their nature, carry risk, but they must believe that these risks are known, they can understand them, and they can measure them. We can contribute to that, but we need to operate in a certain environment. Therefore, from our perspective, in promoting healthy growth of local market developments, the policymakers and the regulators should really be focusing on the steps to preserve and to foster the ability of all market participants, and not only rating agencies, to form an independent view and to operate in a transparent marketplace. Thank you.
Thank you, Michel. I'm sure you'll all agree with me that the topic has been covered fairly extensively by my eminent panelists, but I'm sure a lot of you have many questions that you'd like to ask. We have nearly 20 minutes. We started late, but if you want to make tea on time, if we could try and deal with the questions in the next 20 minutes. We can't see you out there, so if people do have questions, I can see somebody here. Could give them a microphone.
Good morning and thank you. For Alison, please. I'm Tom Krantz, World Federation of Exchanges. I was a bit surprised post 2007, 2008 that IFC as a global institution would still be not recommending a gold standard for bond market structure. Well, okay, OTC, these things are not going to trade so well. We've got this registration, that registration. I found it disappointing. We have a number of emerging markets on stocks as well as bonds who've chosen to leapfrog all of that and really put into a place a gold structure, a solid structure, a visible liquid market, and to try and push issuers up to that level.
Right.
Any comments as to why the continued compromise for lesser transparency? And just one example.
Right,
Before 2007, 2008, mm-hmm. our colleagues in Egypt
right.
raised their stock listing standards, kicked
right.
out about a third of their issuers as being less than good,
mm-hmm.
and trading
right.
multiplied by four.
Yeah.
Before 2007, it sounded like an awful lot of complicated compromises for what should be transparent and simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well. First of all, Tom, you know now that I'm representing not just the IFC but the World Bank as well, so you can put that charge to both institutions. I think again, it's working with markets and just seeing that there are ways to strengthen the over-the-counter operations, and that the concerns with with liquidity of the trade, and also to some extent that a lot of the entities that are trading on the government side are banks, and that the banks don't necessarily want to work through a broker on the exchange. That those are some of the reasons why we are continuing to work with countries more on the over-the-counter market. But it's something that I know you and I have discussed a bit over the years, so can continue to discuss going forward. And I think as some of the bonds become more liquid, that makes them more tradable on the exchange.
Thank you, Alison. Other questions? There's somebody up on the left there. In fact, two people there. Do we have a microphone?
Yeah. Hello?
Yes, please go ahead. It's very difficult for us to see you, but please go
ahead. I'm Satoru from Japan. I also have a question to Alice Howard. Yeah. Actually, what is the role of the development institution like World Bank in the context of broader context development towards the capital market? I mean, not only the bond market. Mm-hmm. So, what if the general perception that the role of World Bank is lending and poverty reduction? Where to put your capital market job into the mainstream job of the World Bank, or maybe the shortest question is what extent World Bank and capital markets are relevant?
To what words are we relevant? Well, I'm not sure. Let me make sure I understand the question. I mean, the way that we're doing the capital markets work is, I mean, we really see the development of the capital markets as just a means to an end of financing development. So, for instance, on the non-government, the so-called corporate market, we're really tying the development of these markets to how do you develop the market so that you can fund areas like infrastructure development or housing development, and looking at very specific transactions that are trying to be done in different marketplaces around the world, and using those transactions to very clearly outline what are the obstacles to issuing and investing in those kinds of transactions, and what kinds of ways can we help remove some of those obstacles so that that type of financing can be done. So I'm not sure that's answering your question, but that's the way that we link this work to the broader development agenda.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions? Does it mean we covered the top? There is one there. Hi. Thank you.
In the private sector, investors' protection are considered to be better protected if there is an external statutory auditor that is independent from the company issuing shares. What should be the role of an external auditors in the bond markets and in the public sector in general?
I think that's a very good question, and I don't know who would be able to pass comment on that.
If I may offer one comment here, I mentioned the fact that, we an investor can form an opinion, in order for an opinion, for an investor to form an opinion on the risk, he needs to, the financial statements are critical, obviously. Yeah. So the quality of the financial statements, the quality of the financial reporting is, the auditors play a critical role in ensuring that quality. And as for us, as an example, we have we rate bonds, we have certain conditions around the standards that are being used, the type of auditors and certification that is provided, and the infrastructure in the country in terms of accounting and standards and oversight. So, I think the auditors are part of the chain and part of the infrastructure that contribute to the transparency and the integrity of the marketplace.
was the question not directed at government bonds, saying who audits the government, and in the absence of government auditors,
how do you
deal with the issue? That was my understanding of the question. I think it's a good question anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And is that not where rating agencies, in fact, step in and you have to...
Well, I think for governments, the quality of financial reporting of mm-hmm. government is as important as it is for a corporate.
Absolutely. Yes.
And we've seen, I think yesterday there was some reference to mishaps in terms of financial reporting by government, and I think those are very serious issues. And so I think the comment I made would apply to government. Now, there are no necessarily always the same level of oversight provided, although some regions have or countries have obviously oversight of a government and provide checks and balances. For me, the same standard should apply to government as for corporates.
I think that's the answer. Russell, you wanted to comment?
Yeah, no. I just wanted to add to that. Because we've got used to a system of companies being scrutinized more when it comes to that type of thing, because you've got the external auditors, you've got the ratings agencies, you've got the analysts, you've got the listings requirements of the stock exchange on which you are listed. We've got used to that applying to companies, and we're quite happy with that. But then we have these double standards where you say, well, you don't have to have the same standards when it comes to either a state-owned enterprise bond or a government bond. How do you know that you're buying exactly the same thing all the time? So this is exactly something that we are addressing at the JSE, having bought the bond exchange, where we say, guys, if you've got listings requirements for equities, why can't you have listings requirements for bonds? And of course, the first response to that is, we've never done it that way. Well, tough. That doesn't mean to say that that's necessarily the right way to go. And the next reaction, well, this is too much regulation. That's also nonsense. This is not too much regulation. It's just firming up on the process and getting better order into the system. And we are insisting that, and we are winning that one. And there's no reason you can't go that way. There's no intellectual argument that says these things are so different. The one needs regulation, the other one needs absolutely no regulation. That's nonsense. Take that a little bit further. If you say, well, this is sounds a little bit harsh for national treasury bonds and state-owned enterprises. Well, what about corporate bonds? What's the difference between a corporate equity and a corporate bond? So.
I think those points are very valid. But, Russell, if I could ask you, are you not concerned that you might be driving further trade offshore by taking a very strong line?
Well, by having a weak system as we started off with, if you go back 20 years, Rob, by having no regulation, bad regulation, non-existent regulation, regulation that couldn't be surveilled, the trading on our market, in the equities market, what do you think the liquidity of South African stocks was going back 20 years? Well, it's not a trick question. The answer is about 5%. Liquidity velocity, whatever term you choose to use. This is the turnover. Turnover divided by market cap. It was 5%. Now we've introduced a lot of better regulation requirements and imposing the regulation or applying the regulation or monitoring the regulation. And the liquidity is now up to 60%. So how do you regulate? How do you reconcile those two, where you put proper regulation in place and the liquidity and the trade comes back to your market? Trade is not going to happen on your market if it's not transparent, if the trading entity doesn't believe that they're getting a fair deal.
Thank you, Russell. Further questions? Bert. Well, we can just, but the mic is not on.
This question is for Michelle. Credit rating agencies. You mentioned that one of the benefits of credit rating agencies is the prevention of information asymmetry. With that in mind, how do you then view the tendency now to discourage reliance on credit rating agencies? Is there a happy middle ground, or do you think that this is something that is going to cause some distress in the future?
No, I think we, it's actually, I think, a very positive move. The last thing we want, or I think anyone would want, is to have a solid reliance on ratings for investor to make a decision. So I think our view is that, again, what we need to find is a balance, basically, set up where there is sufficient information in the public domain for any investors to form an opinion, and that we, as rating agency, are one of the source of insight and information for an investor to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, we need, if you look back at some of the most critical development we've seen over the last few years, a lot of this has been driven by effectively a lack of transparency and understanding of the investment risk of some of these products. There are many other reasons, but also the fact that an over-reliance effectively by many market participants on one source of information. So I think we actually welcome a rebalancing, basically, and effectively a reduced reliance on ratings. We expect to be relevant. We think we can really bring, as we say, play a significant role by effectively still reducing that asymmetry. It will always exist. For someone, when we look all over the world we operate, when we talk to investors, the ability to actually distillate, develop the analytics, capture the information, translate that into a measure of risk, across many asset classes and many regions, is something that is very expensive and very resource intensive exercise. And that's something that, we can deliver and contribute. So this value remains, even if you make the information much more available, much more transparent, and even if you remove that, over-reliance that may have been existing in certain segments of the market.
Thank you. Anyone else? We still have a few minutes. Yes, we have a question over there.
Robert, it's Japheth Kato from Capital Markets Authority, Uganda. Maybe this is to Alison. Is there any role of guarantees and credit enhancements and issues of tax incentives to kickstart or enhance some of the new bond markets, particularly in the area of infrastructure bonds and so on? It's not something I hear these days. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you raised it. I think that's the use of credit enhancement of different types is tremendously important, I think, in these markets. And again, it's a lot of it comes back to investors not being, domestic investors not being used to taking credit risk, investing in bank deposits and government paper, and only wanting to buy bonds issued by very well-known companies. And so I've always felt that credit enhancement is a way to bring out more issuers into the marketplace that investors are willing to buy into. Certainly with infrastructure products, I think that's going to be really important. And also different types of asset-backed structures, which also certain kinds of infrastructure projects lend themselves to, being able to securitize toll receipts, future payments that are water receivables, but using structures that are straightforward and where the underlying flows are of good quality, so we're not seeing the kinds of problems that we saw several years ago. But I do think that credit enhanced products are a really important product to have in developing the markets.
Thank you. Anything else?
Mr. Barrow?
Yeah. Richard Britton from the International Capital Market Association. I think, again, sorry, it's a question for Alison. Clearly, the one area of disagreement we saw this morning was as between the on-exchange versus OTC approach to bond trading. Over the last couple of days, the other one seems to be how much you can actually rely on institutional investors doing their own due diligence. I mean, Hans Hogevers yesterday in this hall made a pretty strong attack on underwriting standards, both by issuers and indeed by the investment banks before and through the crisis who were selling those bonds to institutional investors, and saying, really, there's no difference between institutional and retail investors, and they should both be protected by the regulators in their decision making. And I'm trying to see how that doesn't seem to sit very easily with the World Bank's proposition that there should be a greater role for private placements, or at least the hybrid model, which one might sort of paraphrase as light touch regulation, but still ultimately relying on the institutional investor to do its own due diligence and not rely on regulation. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how she sees that debate, if it is indeed a debate, panning out over the next couple of years as between like the regulators versus the capital market development agenda.
No, I mean, it is the question about this whole approach. The whole approach is whether or not you can be working with investors to strengthen the investor's ability to analyze the information the right way. So that's why it's not something that you do lightly. You know, at the same time, you know, there's this constant challenge in developing these markets where, you know, bank loans are, you know, the bonds are not competing with bank products because the bank loans are too inexpensive. That's a big challenge that you see in a lot of countries around the world. The regulators are often taking a long time to approve the issues, which is also making them less attractive to do. Now, that's a different issue that a lot of regulators are working on, is how do you become more efficient about evaluating the information. But I think, you know, the idea is not this is the only way you do it. It's to have more of a range of options at different types of issuers can use it. Not that every single issuer would be appropriate to do a private placement. There's different kinds of protections that I think would need to be in place for this to work well. And those are the kinds of things that we're wrestling with right now. And we're putting this out as an idea to think about as part of a development process, and to see whether or not you can make something like this work better, because these markets have just been clogged and have not been developing for many, many years. So that's, but recognizing that is the big question.
Thank you. I take it that the light's fading is an indication that it's the start of tea time. If there's any more urgent questions, I'd be happy to take one last one.
My question is for Michelle. I'm Stella Kilonzo from the Capital Markets Authority, Kenya.
Sorry, can you talk up? We can hardly hear you.
I'm Stella Kilonzo from the Capital Markets Authority in Kenya. Mm-hmm. My question is to Michelle. We've seen a lot of, in South Africa, for example, there is no law requiring credit rating, but we have seen a lot of use of credit rating in nascent markets where the corporate bond market is not very strong. We have seen, for example, in Kenya, there's only one company that is registered to rate. But we've seen that because of that, there's been a lot of reliance on the securities regulator's approval, in as much as that approval is obviously just saying that the investor should still be the one to make the decision on whether that investment is right, especially for the bonds, corporate bonds. But we've seen, based on that approval, the ratings in terms of the basis points, the cost of that of that bond actually goes down with our approval as compared to if it was a private placement. How do we ensure that in as much as we require the independent expertise from all the different investors as well as different participants like the advisors, that we can still get more credit rating companies to participate in the market? For example, in South Africa, it's not a law, but we've seen a lot of credit rating companies in.
I think, I guess the question you're asking is, how can we see an increased participation of rating agencies in domestic markets? You know, I think there is clearly an issue of scale and size, and We have had, as a firm, a very, I think, you know, very successful operation in this country, and partly is the fact that we've been able to offer, you know, services to a broad range of assets and with a scale that allows us effectively to put in place a platform of analysts and analytics that can deliver that service. So I think when we, and this is something that is more difficult to do when you talk about, you know, smaller effectively markets, and the way we're approaching that is really through a regional approach, basically. And I think that rather than looking at domestic market, one way to approach that is to try to develop more regional platforms that will allow us to have the scale, basically, that will allow us to really provide the quality of service and the quality of analytics and insight that, you know, you deserve and you should expect from a rating agency. And to be very candid, at this stage, I think we are far from where we would like to be, but we are working on that. And one of our aspirations, again, is to have a much larger impact than we have today in the region. But again, most likely will be through a regional approach rather than a local, basically, footprint, which are difficult to support, basically, purely because of the economics of the sort of activities we carry.
Thank you, Michel. If I could add to that, certainly South Africa would not prescribe the requirement for a rating agency on any bonds. That's up to the marketplace. The achievement of a AAA rating on a bond obviously makes it more attractive. And to the extent that there is no rating, the market will price that risk into the product. And surely that is the correct way to go. Whether you can achieve that in a smaller market, I would still suggest that the regulator should not be a nanny regulator and attempt to protect investors against their own foolhardiness if they're not going to do their homework. So I think that's the attitude that we would have, and something that regulators should take home. I would like to thank you all for being so attentive. I'd certainly like to thank my panelists for dealing with the topic, I think, very competently. I think there are a lot of points that have come out that will give guidance to various regulators that they can take home. And I think the five of us will be around at tea time, and any further questions you have, please feel free to direct them to us. Thank you very much. Thank you, panel.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. Just a housekeeping announcement. Please do note that we ask that the third panel, if they could please meet in front, as your moderator, Aruna Orte, would just like to brief you on that. And then, ladies and gentlemen, just a word of warning. When you come back, can I ask that you all sit as far forward as possible and that we sort of try to group our delegates in the front region, because we're also going to have a bit of an interactive session, I'm told, by the moderator. So when you come back, please do meet in front or sit closer to the front. Ladies and gentlemen, please try to be inside the auditorium again just 3 minutes before so that we can start promptly at 11 with the next session.
Circle below.